Behold, I bring you good news of great joy. Why do you suppose the angels thought joy was so important they had to startle those poor shepherds? As far as I can tell, joy is easy to find during the holidays. If you want Christmas joy, you can find a movie with that title on the Hallmark Channel. Nordstrom invites us each year to rack up the joy at their stores. Hewlett-Packard says their devices spread the joy. Starbucks suggests their coffee will help you share the joy. I even saw joy on a box of donuts this year. And of course, Walmart believes they have more ways to Christmas joy than anyone else. You've heard their catchy jingle, a little more tree, a little more snow, a couple more reindeer, a couple more bows, a few more presents so the stockings nice and stuffed, another Lego set because a million aren't enough. A little more garland so the stairway looks divine. Why stop at three wise men when the mantle fits nine? A little more joy for Christmas. Can we really blame Walmart for misunderstanding joy? Over the years, we've wrapped up happiness and joy into an enormous Christmas bundle, making it extremely difficult to differentiate between the two. Happiness is an emotion that arises from feelings of pleasure, but joy is something much more profound. The incredible thing about joy is that it is not dependent on our feelings or circumstances. Even when we are experiencing pain, sadness, addiction, depression, loneliness, we can still have joy. Even if we are grieving so much loss, we can't bring ourselves to be happy this year. We can still have joy. Because joy is not about happiness. Joy is a transcendent song, so deeply rooted in the core of our being that it can be sung throughout all generations, embodied in any season of life, and vocalized with the color of every emotion. Joy is about being part of something bigger than ourselves. Like the love of God breaking into human history and turning the world upside down. Before the heavenly hosts cracked the sky with the good news of great joy, it was first expressed by a poor Jewish woman named Mary living in the ghetto of Galilee. And the joy Mary sang about was not about the feeling that comes from getting more stuff. It was about the joy that rises up inside of us when we are lifted up and liberated by the love of God. Mary's song echoed back through history as a song of praise for all the times that God had delivered the people. When Mary sang about a song of joy, she was improvising like a jazz musician on the song Miriam sang when God delivered her people from Egypt. She was riffing on the song Hannah sang when God delivered her in 1 Samuel 2. She was remixing the song of the psalmists and the prophets that they sang when God delivered them from captivity in Babylon. And she was rearranging the songs of the Maccabean revolutionaries that sang when God delivered them from the Greeks. Mary's song is a song of deliverance, sung by countless generations in the hope that another world is possible. A new kingdom is coming, and salvation is on its way. She reminds us that singing with joy is an act of resistance. Mary's song is the greatest protest anthem of all time. Dietrich Bonhoeffer called it the wildest and most passionate and most revolutionary hymn ever sung. And throughout history, Mary's song has been said to do many powerful things. It was said to strike fear in the hearts of Russian czars. During the British Empire's occupation of India, Mary's song was prohibited from being sung in churches. In the 80s, poor Guatemalans were emboldened by Mary's song to fight for better wages, and it caused such a stir that the government banned her words. Chilean dictator General Pinochet outlawed Mary's song because he was afraid it would incite revolution. When a group of Argentinian mothers lost their children during the Dirty War and began placing Mary's song on posters throughout the capital, the government forbid the display of her words as too dangerous. And in 2011, the Occupy Wall Street movement sang Mary's words in Zuccotti Park, confronting the greed of Wall Street and the disparity between rich and poor. Here in America, our government has never banned Mary's song, but they don't have to because we become so good at singing her words without believing what they say. We've distorted Mary over the years, have we not, by making her into the image of American motherhood. We've turned her into a silent member of the Nativity who does nothing but give birth and quietly ponder the mystery of the Incarnation. We treat her like a sentimental mother or a holy womb for God or an obedient and compliant little girl. But Mary is so much more. Mary has a song of joy to sing, and she will not be silent until we hear her song. Her song proclaims God's love for the poor. It foreshadows all of Jesus' life and teachings about the upside-down kingdom, where the last are first and the least are greatest. Long before Jesus ever said a word, his mother preached good news to the poor. This is why I don't like that song, Mary, Did You Know? Because Mary knew more than anybody about the good news of great joy that was coming into the world. My wife recently said that Mary, Did You Know? Is as ridiculous a question as do they know it's Christmas time in Africa? Louise Malgam grew up as a child of missionaries in the poor villages of the Philippines, and she remembers the day that her parents, the missionaries, first read the words of Mary's song to the Filipino people. They responded with such boisterous celebration, her parents were stunned. They asked the Filipino people why Mary's song elicited such exaltation, and they told the missionaries it was the first time they'd ever heard the good news that God cares about them as poor and oppressed people. It's obvious that Mary's song is good news for the poor. But what about the rest of us? Few of us are as weak as poor as Mary was. We are not living on $2 a day like most of the world. Few of us are going to go to bed hungry and homeless tonight. We may not want to admit it, but in Mary's song of joy, we are the proud and the powerful and the rich. And I don't know about you, but as a person standing here in this high place with a little bit of pride and a certain amount of privilege and power, Mary's song doesn't sound like good news to me. What's so good about being scattered, brought down, sent away empty? I don't want any part of that. That sounds like bad news to me. It certainly doesn't sound like something that will bring me Christmas joy. If Mary's song is what Christmas is really about, then maybe I'll just settle for the joy they're selling at Walmart or Nordstrom's. Richard Rohr says that Jesus and Mary both say the same thing. There are three major obstacles to the coming of the kingdom of God in our world, our attachment to those big three P's, power, prestige, and possessions. And 90% of Jesus' words, Rohr says, align in one of those categories. There are times when Jesus issued harsh warnings to the rich and powerful, but interestingly, there is none of that in Mary's song. There's no resentment or revenge in Mary's words. As one scholar insightfully points out, the proud, the powerful, and the rich are not shamed or injured or punished in Mary's prophetic poem. While it may seem like punishment to be scattered and humbled or sent away empty, Mary was singing about equality, not the reversal of domination. But as a wise person once said, when you are accustomed to living in power and privilege, equality almost always feels like oppression. So we need Mary's song to remind us that equality is not oppression, but the restoration of a right relationship in all of creation. It is the way of harmony and wholeness and peace and shalom. And yet, restoration requires a change in direction that can be quite unsettling for us. Whenever I hear Mary's song, I'm reminded of Dickens' A Christmas Carol. You know that great ghost story? It begins with Jacob Marley, who died 7 years earlier on Christmas Eve. Marley and Scrooge were business partners before Marley's death. But on that fateful Christmas Eve, Marley's ghost would be the first to visit old Scrooge to warn him of the error of his ways. When Marley appears, he is bound captive with chains, long and wound about him like a tail made of cash boxes, keys, ledgers, padlocks, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. Marley tells Scrooge that these are the chains he forged in life as a result of his selfishness and greed. He spent his life obsessing over money, robbing the widows, and swindling the poor to fill his pocket, and so he is condemned to walk the earth for eternity in chains, never to find rest or peace, experiencing incessant torture and remorse. Marley's chains are fashioned from the symbols of his earthly wealth, and in moments of impatience, he flings them on the ground and shakes them at Scrooge, nearly causing him to pass out. Marley tells Scrooge that his chains were as heavy as Marley's 7 years early, and proclaims that you have labored on since, and now yours is a ponderous chain. And he informs Scrooge that he will be visited by three spirits and admonishes him to listen to them, or Scrooge will suffer the same fate. You've seen the movie. You've read the story. But if you think about it, Marley didn't come just to scare Scrooge. He came to save him. His appearance was an act of love and grace. Before Marley visited Scrooge, Scrooge was powerful and possessed by wealth, but the ghost of Christmas past and present and future scattered Scrooge in the thoughts of his heart, humbled him from his throne, and sent him away empty. The experience was not pleasant at all for Scrooge. It was terribly unsettling. But it changed Scrooge's life forever and turned out to be his salvation. When all is said and done, Scrooge discovers he did not miss Christmas and immediately begins giving to the poor and becomes a second father to Tiny Tim. After his transformation on Christmas morning, Scrooge exclaims, "I am light as a feather. I am happy as an angel. I am merry as a schoolboy. I am giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody." But it wasn't happiness Scrooge found on Christmas morning. It was joy. Being scattered, humbled, emptied might not sound like good news, but it is exactly the way to Christmas joy. Mary's song is not just good news for the weak and the poor, but for the rich and powerful as well, because we all need salvation. Mary's song shows us that true joy comes from freedom, but our liberation moves in a different direction, down the path of being delivered from power and prestige and possessions, so we can live in right relationship with God and with all other people. The theologian Leonardo Boff once said, "God flings the proud of the heart to the earth in the hope that they will be free, delivered from their ridiculous vaunting and flaunting, to become free children of God, true brothers and sisters of all people." This is the purpose of Christmas. To be scattered of everything that is preventing us from welcoming the incarnate God, to finally lay down all power and honor, reputation and vanity, arrogance and individualism beside the manger, so we can celebrate Christmas correctly, as Bonhoeffer once said. This is why there is great joy in being scattered. The moment we dare to allow ourselves to be humbled and emptied, God will come into our lives, ignite our hearts with love, and burn like wildfire. The poet Hafez once wrote, "What is the difference between your experience of life and that of a saint? The saint knows that the spiritual path is a sublime chess game with God, and that God has just made such a fantastic move that the saint is now continually tripping over joy and bursting out in laughter, saying, 'I surrender.' Whereas, my dear friend, I'm afraid you still think you have 1,000 serious moves left." The incarnation is God's fantastic move. The only appropriate response to the good news of great joy is to surrender. Moving for power and prestige or possessions won't do anything for us. And so as we journey toward Bethlehem on this holy night, we must ask ourselves, can I surrender to joy? Joy comes like Mary and Marley, and like the heavenly host, to shake up our lives for the sake of our salvation. But we should not be afraid or refrain from singing Mary's song. No, we should sing it like we really believe it and embody her words like our lives depend on it, because that is the best way to discover the great joy that comes with the good news of Christmas. Amen.